Today's show is being brought to you by Bob's Red Mill, believers in good food for all. Learn more at bobsredmill.com/podcast.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hi, I'm Amanda.
And I'm Kim.
And this is Recommended Reading with Food Book Fair.
Recommended Reading with Food Book Fair is a show where we talk about what we're reading, listening to, and watching. Each show will open with us asking each other what we've been consuming lately, media-wise. Food books, of course, but anything in food media, from a provocative photo essay in an independent food magazine, or foodie articles, in our parlance, to thoughtful reportage online, on TV, or in film, to viral food fetish videos. Anything is fair game.
Don't Google hashtag breadface without us.
Exactly. Today's episode is a very special preview of Food Book Fair, which is the annual food festival that we run.
Yeah, Food Book Fair has lovingly been dubbed the Coachella of writing about eating, and it is coming up very soon, May 11th to May 14th at Ace Hotel, New York. And we are all about celebrating food media, all of its makers, all of those that are inspired by food media, and we bring them together under one roof. So we have events ranging from an independent magazine festival. Those are called foodieticals in our world, where you can come and check out all the magazines under one roof, your favorites. Some you might know, like Cherry Bomb. Others are coming from all over the world that you can discover for the first time. We have chef dinners. We have breakfast scheduled. And we have some surprises in store, especially in the lobby of Ace Hotel. So check out foodbookfair.com for all the information, and we'll see you at the fair.
We're going to do a little bit of a preview and maybe get into some of those surprises today with our special guests. So not only will we be talking about our recommended reading, but we will also be inquiring after the recommended reading of Nicholas Morgenstern, founder of Morgenstern's Finest Ice Cream, as well as Melissa Clark, columnist with the New York Times and author of Dinner Changing the Game. But first, Amanda, what are you reading?
Not the best way to start off our first show, but I'm actually going to talk about what I've been watching first. I have never watched the Michael Pollan Netflix series Cooked, and I really wanted to try to get into it. Well, one, because it had been on my list for a minute or two, and second, because one of our chef participants and authors, Samin Nosrat, who just has a brand new book and is participating in our dinner and panel on Friday night, is in it. And her kind of claim to fame is that she's the one that taught Michael Pollan how to cook. So since the show's called Cooked, I had to check it out. And I'm really enjoying it. One, it's beautiful. Two, I'm really digging Michael Pollan's insight into how food has shaped not only America and how we eat here, but really all over the world. So highly recommend.
Cool. I hope Samin will get into some of that and how we cook, what's being cooked in our keynote panel and dinner event on Friday night, which is called What We Talk About When We Talk About Eating. She also has a great new book called Salt, Fat, Acid, Heat out now, illustrated beautifully by Wendy McNaughton. We'll be selling that at our Kitchen Arts and Letters pop-up bookstore in the Ace Hotel lobby as well. So put that on your list.
Yeah, super excited for Samin's book. And as Kim mentioned, what's really, really neat about it is there's no photographs. It's a cookbook that's all illustrated. It's truly one of a kind. So definitely check it out. The one thing I have been reading, and then one other quick thing I want to talk about, is I've been reading this book by Public Announcements and Done to Death Project's Chris Black. It's called I Know You Think You Know It All, Advice and Observations for You to Stand Apart in Public and Online. Kim, do you like to stand apart?
I thought I knew it all.
You don't. That's why you need to read this book. And also, Chris is going to be with us recording the keynote Friday night panel that we spoke about at Food Book Fair. And he'll be bopping around at other times, too. So I just want to leave us with one or two nuggets from this book that really just... I think, I think it's when you think you know it all, you really don't. So this is number 306.
How many are there in there?
There's about 420, and then there's some larger ones on certain pages. So I think Chris has done a pretty comprehensive job here. But this is one of my favorites, number 306.
Great.
Brunch is a colossal waste of time and money. Couldn't agree more. And that's why at Food Book Fair, we are only doing breakfast. We have two breakfasts. They're both amazing. The one on Saturday is with April Bloomfield and Liz Pruitt of Tartine Bakery and Tartine Manufacturing in San Francisco. She's coming to New York. She has a bomb new book. And can't wait to see what her and April come up with. So join us on Saturday morning for that breakfast. And then...
And speaking of the bomb, you like what I did there. Carrie Diamond, editorial director of Cherry Bomb Magazine and host of Radio Cherry Bomb here at Heritage Radio Network, will be interviewing April and Liz in conversation after this breakfast inspired by Liz's new book, Tartine All Day. But that's not it. That's not all.
Salad for breakfast, you say? Yes, if it's with Salad for President. And that's exactly what's happening on Sunday, May 14th, at the John Dory as part of Food Book Fair. You will be the hero of your family if you bring your mom to this.
Free sparkling wine for moms. But for everybody, you got a copy of Julia Sherman's brand new book, Salad for President, which is inspired by creative interviews and recipes with artists and making salads together. You also get a zine. You get a limited edition Bagu tote bag. You get a special box of, can I call it compost? You get a special box of microgreens and things to get them going with the folks from Goodwater Farms and a couple other things that we can't tell you about. You have to come.
I was wondering how Kim was going to describe the Goodwater Farms giveaway.
You have to be there. You really have to be there.
It's just it's a bunch of dirt. What happens after that, you'll only know if you come to the breakfast. So Kim, what are you reading or watching or listening to?
I'm reading My Soul Looks Back, the memoir by Dr. Jessica B. Harris about coming into her own in the 70s and 80s in New York, living in the West Village, becoming friends of the Black intelligentsia, and becoming part of it herself. And that includes folks like James Baldwin, Maya Angelou, Toni Morrison. It's really an incredible book. And it's a memoir that is narrative, and it includes memories, and it includes reminiscences, but also recipes and playlists, because all of her friends loved drinking and eating and going out and hanging out together and common salady, and that was such a big part of their lives. And we actually have Jessica as an incredibly special honored guest, and we're so thrilled to have her with us for a special edition of Literary Swag Book Club with Food Book Fair on Saturday during Food Book Fair for an event called Have You Eaten Yet? Inspired by James Baldwin, Food and Self-Care. And Yadon Israel, the founder of Literary Swag Book Club, just posted an extract from the book, which is conveniently on Instagram. So I'm going to read it out loud to you, a little bit about James and his relationship to food, because it's not talked about very much and is not documented very much. In photos, he's often seen smoking, looking out in the distance, middle distance, by himself. But he really placed import on his relationships with friends and the conversations that would take place over the dinner table or over cocktails. So here you go.
I'm reading this book too. It's so good.
We have our own book club. It's just two people. Jimmy liked excursions and adored good company. As much as he required solitude and never missed his daily appointment in the torture chamber, he also liked diversions and reveled in the presence of folks who had good conversation. He possessed, as did many of the circle of friends, an incredible ability to stay out, hang out, drink well and often, and never miss his downstairs date.
Jimmy being James Baldwin.
And the torture chamber being his office.
And this is the part in the book in France, right? In the south of France.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, when you get into the book, which I know everyone who's listening will read, it's really just this description is so incredible because you can really picture him downstairs in his quote unquote torture chamber in the south of France and then grandly coming up the stairs for cocktails and dinner.
Yeah. And we'll be joined by the fine folks from Harvest and Revel, one of our favorite independent food businesses here in New York, who will be making special snacks for that event, inspired by this book and the relationships and stories within. So you should join us and you can check it out. And it comes with a copy of the book when you get a ticket, if that wasn't good enough.
Speaking of books, let's talk Nicholas Morgenstern about the books that he loves. Again, if you're just joining us, we are so stoked to have the founder of Morgenstern's Finest Ice Creams in the house with us today, Nicholas Morgenstern himself. Welcome to the show.
Hello, Kim and Amanda.
Hey, Nick.
We don't see enough of each other already, so I'm glad to be in a booth with you two.
Booth life. So, Nick, let's just start off by talking about what you're reading or watching or listening to.
We were talking about this earlier, and Kim said, is anyone going to believe that you actually have a copy of The Oxford Companion to Sugar and Sweets, edited by Dara Goldstein, on your bedside table? And I said, I don't care if they believe it or not. It's true. That book is on my bedside. So that's something that I find at nighttime, if I can't sleep, I like to flip it open. It's a huge book that talks about how sugar has been integrated into all different parts of human history and what its cultural references from country to country and how specific recipes were cultivated or applied in different parts of the world at different times in the world. It's great. And it has recipes and anecdotes and all different kinds of things. It's one of my favorite things, actually, to look at. Understanding a different perspective on how to think about how food has affected the way that we have all grown up. And there's a fair emphasis in the book on how sugar is such a part of childhood. Being an ice cream maker, that's an important part of my business model. And working the register at Morgenstern's, I learned maybe 6 or 10 months in that for most of us, especially in this country, melted ice cream was probably the first sweet that any of us ever had, and it creates a really, really strong connection. And we see that manifested all the way up through senior citizens having trouble making a decision at the counter. We have a lot of flavors on the menu at Morgenstern, so it creates a whole paradox for people to have to, you know, decide what they're gonna get. So, anyways, I'm reading that.
Can you talk a little bit about your ice cream memory?
Like, personally?
Yeah. What made you so interested in ice cream?
We're going to come back to that.
Okay.
We'll come back
to
that.
Wow, I put Nick on the spot.
Because I'm thinking,
he's punting till the end. That's fine.
Because I have all these different references, and every single time that I'm out, and I get asked this question so much now, why ice cream? And most of the time I'm like, why not? Or it's a difficult question for me to answer. Okay. And I've learned over time, as I've talked about it more, that there are things that really pulled me towards it. And it was something that I didn't develop the idea. It was always there. And I've just sort of been uncovering it over time. So I can look back in the history of the timeline, especially of my professional career working in sugar and sweets as a pastry chef. And there's like pivotal moments when I was like, aha, that's important to me and I love it and I'm gonna figure out how to do something with that. So it was a long path for me. I was in the business almost 20 years before I opened Morgenstern's, but I know that my very first job working in Germany, I went to a glass house outside of Berlin and saw an old man making ice cream. I worked in the kitchen with him for a day, and I knew then that I wanted to do that. And then it took me like 20 years to sort of come around full circle to being able to do that. But as a kid, I wasn't really allowed to eat sugar very much. Having hippie parents in San Francisco, sugar was big taboo no-no. So maybe some ice cream like at the zoo was allowed, or something like an ice cream sandwich or something like that. So anyways, we can get into my like early childhood ice cream experiences.
Yeah. I recall at Food Book Fair 2015 where you spoke on a panel about sugar and sweets with Joanne Chang of Flower Bakery, Brooks Headley, now of Superiority Burger, moderated by Dara Goldstein.
Yeah, she was incredible. Yeah,
she's great. Incredible. She was we great. Love you, Dara. Yeah. You mentioned that you grew up in a time and place being the Bay Area in the 80s where refined sugar did not exist.
No, it wasn't allowed. It was an import tax, and they wouldn't let refined sugar on the peninsula. Yeah,
you managed to get to the zoo for that sandwich.
I went to the zoo. I have zoo memories as a kid, really crazy memories of, like, the orangutans throwing their feces at my brother and, like, him getting his hot dog stolen by a seagull. And there were that.
See, there's even food in that memory.
This is a family show.
Well, that's what happened. He was little. It was bad. But we like the concession stand at the zoo is probably the first place that I actually was allowed to eat ice cream. The rules were bent at the zoo. We were allowed to eat hot dogs and things like that at the zoo. Anyways, yeah.
So. What about some reading on your bedside table that doesn't have to do with food?
With sweets. I'm reading right now. I'm burning through the Elon Musk biography by Ashley Vance. I really find that inspiring and interesting, and I love his story. He's a visionary. He's been ultimately determined to achieve massive, massive goals of his own that he believes are good for humanity and the world, and specifically the globe, as far as creating solar power in the United States and hopefully in the world. That's a big one for him with Solar City. And then he has an automobile company called Tesla, which you may have heard of. And those are cars that people drive that are powered by electricity.
Making fun of me.
No, I'm not. No gasoline is burned, theoretically, in the powering of those vehicles, though there is the question of how that power is produced to power those cars. That's my little quibble with the solar or the electric car movement. But anyways, and then he's got SpaceX, which is his crazy company that's building rocket ships that are going to Mars and stuff. So the book just talks about the challenges that he faced and like how many obstacles were in his way and the real challenges and working with other people to achieve big goals and big dreams. And that's incredibly inspiring to me. And the moral of the story so far, I'm halfway through the book, is like, nobody's perfect. Nobody's a good guy. When you have dreams and visions that are that big, and ultimately the level of determination required to achieve something that at every step and every turn, someone's telling you, no, this is not possible. No, this is not possible. And it's inspiring to see that this guy basically, you know, he comes from relatively humble beginnings and had a challenging upbringing in childhood and won't let anything stand in his way to achieve his goals. And he's done it. And and he's not done, but he's done it. You know, the success of his companies is globally recognized. So I'm reading that. And then I always have The New Yorker by the bedside. I try to get through The New Yorker in 7 days.
Are you caught up?
I am. Yeah, I'm caught up right now. I have the current issue in my bag. I was in LA for the weekend, and I was reading it on the plane and stuff. I'm almost done. So, yeah, the new one will come. I get mine late. I don't know why. I get it on Tuesday. So it gives me an extra day, but it's not really an extra day because I have...
I get mine on Wednesday.
Okay, so I'm early.
I think it drops on Wednesday.
I used to get it like on Sunday night.
Maybe this
night,
is
Monday
why
morning.
I'm behind. Cause
oh,
I'm
you're in
day.
Brooklyn, though. You're getting yours delivered in Brooklyn. Right. Yeah.
Island snob over here.
Yeah, you still live in Brooklyn. So anyways, that's my stuff. That's what I'm reading right now, more or less. There's other things floating around.
Cool. Well,
I have Chris Black's book on my bedside also. I know you think you know it all.
I heard you read it in one sitting.
One sitting. I burned through it. I did. It took like an hour and a half. It was great.
This book took you an hour and a half.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe less. I don't know. I was like stopping and eating trail mix and then picking it back up because it kept making me laugh. It's
well,
so
you can
funny.
Flip the page and eat the trail mix with one.
It's
with
so
the
funny.
Other hand.
It's hilarious. The book is hilarious. Chris is a good friend of mine and I've known him for a long time. And then he like gave me a copy of the book and then I read it and it just made me see him in a whole new light.
Well, I know that... Nick, you hooked us up with Chris for Food Book Fair, and we're doing a couple things together. You want to talk about your special surprises?
So we're going to have a table in the lobby on Saturday from 12 to 4 during Foodiotticals, which is the sort of festival of small food zines.
Correct.
Right? Is that a good plug? You got the plug on that?
It's the fair within the fair.
It's the fair
within the fair.
Yeah. And it's a fun free-for-all. I would say that's how I describe it. It's like a fun free-for-all. So
don't let the ace hear you say that.
I'm telling them. I've been telling them it's a fun free-for-all. That's what they want. So we'll have the table for 4 hours in the lobby, and Chris will be recording a podcast with Jason Stewart of The Stew for
AKA
a couple of hours.
Them Jeans.
Them Jeans, right? And they're going to do that from 12 to 2, probably while Morgan Stearns is serving up some Luxardo sorbet flavors that we've developed over the years with those guys. I love Luxardo cherries. They're the best. And they have a whole line of spirits that we work with to make flavors for them. And then also some illustrators will be doing some illustrations to pair off with the interviews that Chris and Jason are doing during the podcast. But I'm not going to spoil anything else. If you want to see that, you should come. It's going to be hot. And then after that, Paul Liebrandt and I are going to be making some ice cream sundaes from 2 to 4 that day as well. So that'll be fun, too.
It's a table takeover, y'all. Just be there.
Yeah, it's going to be cool.
Nick, that sounds awesome. We can't wait to see you and hopefully everyone listening on Saturday for Foodiotticals. Foodiotticals is now 2 days, Saturday and Sunday. And Sunday, we're going to have a special Peanuts party with Chef Steven Satterfield, new James Beard Award winner, author of Root to Leaf, and author of a new edition of Short Stack Editions all about peanuts. So come through for that as well. Full details on foodbookfair.com. After the break, we'll be joined by Melissa Clark, author of Dinner, Changing the Game, food columnist for the New York Times, and our special host and collaborator for our Saturday night Art of Dinner celebration.
Bob's Red Mill is a proud sponsor of Heritage Radio Network and a big supporter of organic farmers. Ray and Tom Williams are two farmers who have worked with Bob for years and co-own an organic farm in eastern Oregon and Washington. Ray shares what their relationship with Bob's Red Mill means to them.
We thought that for over the long term, we thought it would make sense, better sense for the soil. Also, we thought that it was something that would improve the quality of the food supply. We're lucky in that we're working with Bob's Red Mill. We're part of a regional food network with Bob is a fundamental relationship and cornerstone to that. We also work with other best of class people in the Northwest, and we're thankful for the long-term relationship that's brought good things to the soil and good things to our long-term farm economic plans. We appreciate his attitude toward absolutely high standard for the benefit of his customers. We take pride in meeting those standards.
Learn more about Bob's Red Mill and their commitment to good food for all at bobsredmill.com/podcast.
Welcome to the show, Melissa.
Great to be here.
So happy to have you and to be joining forces with you for Food Book Fair.
It is going to be fun.
I think that is going to, yes, fun will happen no matter what. So usually we always ask our guests what they are reading. What's on your bedside table?
Well, right now I'm doing a lot of thinking about life and the meaning of life. So I decided to go to Dante. I decided I needed to read. I need to find out about the circles of hell. I just need to know.
How are they?
So, I'm just in the first one where you have the kind of good pagans, you know, a lot of the Greeks and Romans. So far it's not so scary, not so bad, but you know, I'm dipping my toes in.
It's almost like working in the food business.
Now, is that something you read each night before you go to sleep?
Yes, it is.
Okay, that's your routine.
So, yeah, I usually do my reading. I have two different things that I read. I have my subway reading.
Okay.
And then I have my nighttime reading. Okay. And they are distinct. Except when I get really, really into it. You know, I read War and Peace a couple of months ago and I couldn't put it down. So I had to load it on my phone because I just couldn't put it down. It was so compelling. So I was on the subway reading it on my phone, but I didn't want to lug the heavy hardcover book on the subway. So if I'm reading the same book, I have the electronic phone version and then I have the, you know, the real version.
The beauty of technology.
Don't
making
you love
it possible
that?
To read.
Exactly.
It's true.
Did you guys catch actually on the New York Times today, and they have like the update, like New York Today?
Yeah.
They had this little, like a synopsis, but then a link to this website of some wonderful women who are actually leaving books on the subway.
Oh, I love that.
For people to read. And the idea is like they plant them in subways, people are supposed to read them, and then you're supposed to leave them again for someone else.
But how can you do that? Because you get into the book and you want to know what happens.
You know, I think this will really test New Yorkers. Like, maybe take it home for a couple of days, but you know that that book is not yours, and when you're done, you better plant it in the subway again.
There was a story on NPR this morning about kids being so scared when they're young of when their library fees get too big. And so that they're looking at ways to, like, wipe the fees because they really want the kids to read and they don't want them scared off by having to pay the fee. And so the idea of, like, sharing the book, like, that's really what it should be about, and that you're not penalized. So if you take the book from the subway and it makes its way into your bag and you hold on to it, maybe you leave a different book behind.
Yeah.
Or it's like a lending library.
Actually, it should be two for everyone.
Right.
You know? So you take one, you leave two.
Exactly.
I think. And then that way everyone won't have to worry about the clutter.
Yeah.
Read your books and pass them on. I get a lot of free cookbooks. I get sent review copies, and I have stacks and stacks and stacks of cookbooks. And I'm always looking for places to donate them. Sometimes I have a yard sale, and then I'll donate the money to a charity. So, you know, just get them back out there.
Right. Well, I know one thing. We'd never leave Melissa's new book, Dinner Changing the Game, on the subway. That is for sure.
Nice segue.
Thanks, Kim. Maybe tell us a little bit about what inspired the book and what you hope people who buy and use the book will take from it. And yeah, just what really prompted this subject.
Amanda and I have been fighting over our one copy, so we'll have to
I will have to get you guys another one. Yeah. Well, you know, I work at the Times. I have a column every week, and I hear the same thing from people over and over again. You know, about 4 o'clock, my email box gets a little crazy. My phone starts blinking, and they're like, "Oh my God, dinner! What am I going to make for dinner?" You know, it's as if they've never done this before. I'm like, you know, you made dinner yesterday.
Right.
They're like, "Wait, I just made dinner. I have to do it again," and it's this constant panic for people. And you know, you're so busy. We are all so busy. And the last thing that we really have time to do is like, hey, let's think about a creative and non-complicated dish that I can make for dinner that'll be new and exciting. You know, we don't have the bandwidth. And that is my job. That is what I do in my column. I work really hard to come up with simple food for people, but that's interesting. That thing, little twists that they haven't seen before. Mm. And so what I did in this book was I took my column and I took it one step further. So I took a lot of those same concepts, but then I said, well, all right, you know, how can I make them even easier? How can I make them even a little more exciting? Mm. And just take them to that next level. You know, when you have a weekly column, you don't have a lot of time to go back and say, oh, wait, if I only could have had another week deadline, you know, I need an extra week. And you don't have that deadline. You know, you produce something every single week. And the book was a way to say, hey, how do I take it, you know, just make it a little bit better, a little bit faster, make the cleanup slightly more streamlined. And I really see that people have been cooking from it, and it's been helpful. And there are 200 recipes, so you don't have to panic. You can just open the book, find something.
I've been going through the book, and I think I told you before we came in that a very good friend of mine was in town from Portland, and he saw it on my table, and he has two kids and faces the challenge of preparing dinner, I think, is more difficult for him, and I had to give him the book.
You are a good soul, Nick.
I wanted him to have it, but what I like about what you do both in the column and in the book is you give such simple reminders of core cooking technique.
Yeah.
That's really critical, as well as the updates on how we can make this food interesting for day-to-day cooking for dinner. But really, that's what I love about what you do, is that really simple reminder, this is how you do this. I think it's resonates for someone who cooks for a living, as well as for someone who does it maybe once or twice a week just for dinner.
Well, that's probably because I learned, you know, I'm sort of self-taught, but I've also learned what I know. I've learned from chefs. Yeah. I mean, I always say that I had the best culinary instruction. I've written probably 24 cookbooks in collaboration with different mm-hmm. chefs. And what you do when you do that is you basically get these tutorials from some of the best chefs in the entire world. You know, I worked with Danielle Ballou. I worked with David Boulay. I worked with the Brombergs from Blue Ribbon. And Claudia Fleming, the folks at Franny's. And each chef does it a little differently, you know, which is thrilling, because then you learn their technique. And then mm-hmm. you learn, well, hey, you know, so-and-so chops an onion this way, and so-and-so does it this way. I like this way better. I'm going to do it this way. And it's freeing because you see that there's no, you know, one right way to cook. There's so many ways to cook. But it's also great because you really understand the difference in technique. And I try to, so what I do is I kind of boil that down and like, okay, what's the easiest thing? Because chefs don't always know what's easiest for the home cook because, you know, they've got, they're just, it's a different perspective. And what's easy for them might not be easy for someone coming home after work and helping their kids with their homework and unloading the dishwasher at the same time that they're cooking. And so that's where I come in. I can distill all that.
What, if there was one recipe that you would want someone who just got your book to try for the first time, or what would it be?
I always say, okay, the cover recipe. You know, you it's really hard to think about, what are you going to put on the cover?
Right. That must be hard.
It was hard. So I think the cover recipe, it's a harissa chicken. So it's chicken marinated in harissa or harissa spices. If you don't have harissa, harissa is a North African spice paste. But if you don't have it, you can use a combination of spices. You marinate the chicken and then you do it on a sheet pan. And I love a sheet pan dinner because you cook everything at once. It's like a one pan meal. It all goes on the pan. It goes in the oven. And then you can, you know, do the rest of your day and, you know, or the rest of your evening while that's getting ready. You're chilling. Maybe you're reading. We're talking about reading. Maybe you're actually reading something or you're cleaning up or you're, you know, in another space while it cooks. And then it's all ready together. So it's chicken, potatoes, leeks, roasted leeks are so delicious. Mm. And then a yogurt sauce on top and some fresh arugula. And it's just such a great meal because it hits all the notes. You know, it's spicy. It's a little sweet. It's got the tang from the yogurt. And then, of course, you know, brown chicken skin. You cannot argue with brown chicken skin. And it's fast. The whole thing comes together in under 45 minutes.
Wow.
I can't wait to try it. I'm really excited.
Hopefully I'll try it if I ever get my copy of the book from our copy.
Technical question. Do you cut open the chicken and lay it flat?
You know, I do that a lot, but for this recipe, it's chicken parts.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
That's the way. A whole chicken takes longer than that.
Cool. Yeah. Well, anyone who comes to the Art of Dinner at Food Book Fair on Saturday, May 13th, is going to get a copy of Dinner, Changing the Game, Melissa's brand new book. So definitely check out all the surprises that we have in store that night. It's a multifaceted meal with special guest photographer Melanie Dunay, also she's co-hosting, and then Kevin Young, poetry editor of The New Yorker. So Nick, maybe you can talk to him about your subscription.
What day of The New Yorker should be coming.
Yes.
I'll drop him a note.
It's just always a happy surprise when it arrives in my box, right? It's like, oh, there it is, The New Yorker. And it is, you know what's so great, talking about poetry. So at this dinner, we're going to have, Kevin is going to come to the dinner and he's going to read his amazing poetry. And I think there's a strong, you know, he has a book on poetry and food, and there's such
the
a strong connection.
Which is incredible.
Yeah, there's such a strong connection because, you know, flavor, taste and... it's really hard to describe taste and the experience of eating. And I think the sort of spare, distilled way that poetry does it is so much closer than lots and lots of words, you know, because tastes are so specific. So I think there's a great connection, and it's going to be great to have him at the dinner.
Can't wait to see him there.
There are multiple collaborators on this dinner, and beyond Melissa Clark, our other guest on the show, if you were listening earlier, is Nicholas Morgenstern of Morgenstern's Finest Ice Cream, and there will be something going on there as well, if you want to talk about that.
We're doing the dessert for both of the dinners, Friday night with April Bloomfield, Mario Batali, and then on Saturday we're doing with Melissa and Melanie, and so we're gonna do a little revisit to Melanie's flavor that we developed at Morgenstern's, which is Under the Cherry Moon, really inspired by Melanie's love for Prince, and it's a cherry ice cream with the Luxardo cherries mixed in. Cherry ice cream is not a flavor that's on the menu at Morgenstern's, so when we bring something like that out, it sells out very quickly. So it was only available for 24 hours the last time we did it in January, so we're going to bring that out for the dinner on Saturday. That's going to be great.
Okay, I've never tasted it, so I cannot wait.
Yeah, it's really good.
We should try to coordinate a screening of Under the Cherry Moon, which I always say is much better than Purple Rain, and it's completely in black and white.
Melanie would agree with you. I don't
she
know.
And I are the only two people that you feel this way. We've discussed this. This is how we...
Yeah, you two might be the only two that feel that way.
Yeah.
Cool.
Well, we usually ask guests what's on their bedside table to close out the show, but we sort of jumped right in bed at the beginning. So let's ask you, what you have coming up on your reading list, something that you've been eyeing, well, whether that's in a future New Yorker issue or,
you know, not. we've been talking about poetry. And, you know, one of the things that when I was one of the, another thing that I just connected back to my book, but you know, one of the
course.
Things that
that's what
I,
we're here for.
I tell people when they, you know, people are so reluctant to start cooking, you know, and because it's work. And I say, you know what? Find the joy in it. Find the joy in cooking. And for me, that very personally, that joy is being with my family in the kitchen. You know, we're all together. And my husband is reading to me. And that's an important, I'm cooking. My daughter's, you know, doing her homework and trying to ignore us. And my husband is you know, she's like rolling her eyes. And my husband's reading to me or, you know, and he often reads poetry because what's so great about it is it feels right in the moment. It feels right in our kitchen. And it's, you can read a poem. It takes about, in the amount of time it takes me to cook dinner, you can read maybe one or two poems depending and really like, you know, and when you're reading them. So some of the poems that were, some of the things that we've been enjoying recently, Frank O'Hara is a big favorite in our house. Speaking of ice cream, our favorite poem, one of our favorite poems is The Emperor of Ice Cream by Wallace Stevens. Of course that's our Wi-Fi network at our house.
Really?
Yes.
if we're walking around and get close enough and see that pop up, we'll know.
Exactly.
We'll know it's you.
Exactly. Then you know you're in my neighborhood. And, you know, and of course, Kevin Young is also on our rotation.
How did that tradition get started of reading poetry? What?
You know, we started with the Iliad. So I have an 8-year-old child, when she was a baby, there, you know, and you have so many nursing hours. I mean, talk about feeding, you know, it's like this connection between feeding right. somebody and poetry. I'd sit there and I'd nurse and we started reading. I wanted him to read to me and he wanted to, it was just this great thing. And so that's how it started. I'd nurse my child. We read the Iliad. Then we read the Aeneid. I had read the
this
Odyssey.
This is like a great books course.
Yeah. It's good. I had just read the Odyssey. So we didn't reread that. And then we started doing, Don Quixote, which is just one of my favorite books of all times. And then, you know, you do that for hours. When you're nursing, you do it for hours, you know, just especially when your child is very small at the beginning. So we read long books. Now we are cooking shorter meals, and so we read poetry. But it all, you know, it's just part of it. There is food and literature, food and reading, cooking and reading. It is all part of the same thing. It's this creative way to experience the world. It's a lens for the world. And I do it in flavors, and I do it in words. And so I want to take those in, and I want to hear them as well as put them out there.
What's your daughter's favorite dinner?
She, you know, when my husband's not around, you know what she and I eat? We make a big Caesar salad, and she insists on homemade croutons. So we'll make a big Caesar salad, tons of Parmesan cheese, and we'll eat it together in one bowl. We'll just eat, put it in the bowl, put it on the table, and just eat it with our hands. Mm. And that is, and then we have ice cream for dessert.
Anchovies?
Yeah. She doesn't actually, we don't really discuss them. They're there, but they're, you know, in the dressing.
Just in the dressing, not in the salad as well.
Just in the dressing, not in the salad. Yeah. I will have extra anchovies on the side. She knows
that's
the anchovies are in the dressing. It's just one of those, like, you know, let's just not talk about it.
Got it.
Yeah. I feel the same way. I've duped many a person that came to my house. Nick, what's your favorite dinner?
Right now, like to cook at home? My go-to is still, well, I love making bolognese, like on Sunday. Oh. I like making Sunday sauce.
Okay.
My buddy Lucas Moran, he comes over because he's like South Brooklyn gangster. So I make sauce and we usually watch like Raging Bull or maybe one of the God. I'm not kidding. It's a funny.
So instead of poetry, you watch.
We have a movie going in the background. One of those movies, Scorsese always has food in the movie somehow. So if you watch Goodfellas, there's lots of cooking happening.
Oh, yeah.
And then we usually make some kind of a Caesar, actually. It might be a variation depending on what kind of greens we were inspired to get. And then usually we're like making gravy on a Sunday with bread and wine. And like that's the jam. I love doing that. Yeah.
What's your anchovy, crouton, Parmesan strategy?
I do it all. I mean, I go usually if I can get the anchovy, like really, I mean, the anchovies have to be really good to be able to just like sort of, I like to have them in the dressing and also chopped up in the salad.
Yeah.
But I love anchovies. I'll eat anchovies on crackers with butter like all day long.
That's my favorite snack. Toast, butter, anchovies on top. It's the best.
And if you have time and you want to do it with like pizza bianca, you slice the pizza bianca in half like super thin, like make a sandwich, and you butter it liberally with salted butter. lots of anchovies and then tons of chopped parsley, and you put the top back on it and cut it in little fingers and eat that and feed people champagne. And trust me, it's a wrap.
White anchovies or the regular?
White anchovies.
Okay.
Well, you can do both.
You do white? No. Really?
I'll do both.
Really?
I do.
Really? Yep. Oh, no. I'm for Caesar salad.
Not for the Caesar. Okay. But when I'm eating it like a little sandwich, I'll do either one.
Okay.
Either one.
To me, white anchovies are more like pickled herring. That experience, maybe because I'm a Jewish girl from Brooklyn. Like, yeah. To me, that's like my taste memory.
I get it. But like I still, thing. I think the salty aspect to me is really still just punching through. I don't look at it like herring. I understand what you're saying, but it doesn't qualify.
It doesn't
have the same, I don't want to use the word fishy, but it doesn't have that same fishy quality to me that herring does. But I understand that. I see what you're saying.
It's a slight pickly because they're a little bit pickled.
They're like brined.
Yeah.
That's the flavor, totally.
So where do both of you get your anchovies from? That's what I think everyone is dying to know who's listening. Where do we need to get our anchovies?
D'Espagne.
D'Espagne does have excellent anchovies. But also, the French ones from Collier are really good, and you can get – I get those. Where do I get those?
I don't have them at Whole Foods. That's like Dina and DeLuca or
– Yeah, Dina and DeLuca.
Italy has good anchovies on the shelf too. But you have to buy a good anchovy because a bad anchovy is no bueno.
Yeah, if your anchovies cost less than $5 a jar, don't trust them.
Exactly, I was going to say. Yep. Yeah, those little tins of anchovies at – D'Espagne that have like six fillets in them are like $9.
Yeah, and they're so
but it's worth it.
It's worth every
100%.
Yeah,
yeah. And the oil, you make the dressing with that oil, or I make the dressing with the oil out of the can.
I've never done that.
It's very tasty.
I bet.
And you don't. It's not enough to make the whole dressing, so it's just like it's
a little,
maybe like 50-50. Yeah.
Can we talk sardines next? Like, if we come back, can we talk about sardines?
Yeah. We can have a spin-off show about
follow up.
Canned tin fish.
Yeah.
It's one of our favorite subjects.
Yep. Conservas with Food Book Fair.
Yeah.
Perfect.
You know who else has a great Caesar or take on a Caesar? I don't know what their take on anchovies is, but Roberta's has a great one. And we're broadcasting out of the back of Roberta's as part of Heritage Radio Network, which is a 501c3 food radio dream station supported by members and your gracious donations. So please check them out. Check out our show and our other partner shows at heritageradionetwork.org.
And it's that beating heart. That's what you want to click on to make your donation to keep our show going and all of the other amazing shows on heritageradionetwork.org.
But we'll be talking anchovies with these guys, hopefully at the Art of Dinner on Saturday, May 13th for Food Book Fair, among many other things, checking out their recommended reading and that of many other folks in our pop-up bookstore at our zine fair. And we hope you can join us.
Yeah, we'll see you at the fair.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.